Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, and this is the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation known as the 12th Hour Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 12, 2016, or it is Tishri 12, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, How Beautiful Heaven Must Be. The place that's called heaven, this night for the pure and the clean, these truths in Yah's word is given. A beautiful heaven must be, beautiful heaven must be. Be home of the happy and free, for a heaven of rest for the weary. A beautiful heaven must be, in heaven no drooping, no pining, no wishing for elsewhere to be. God's light is forever this shining, a beautiful heaven must be, a beautiful heaven must be, sweet home of the happy and free, fair heaven of rest for the weary. A beautiful heaven must be. The waters of laughter are flowing, and all who did right may be free. Riches of splendor are flowing. A beautiful heaven must be. Heaven must be, sweet home of the happy and free, for a haven of rest for the weary, a beautiful heaven must be. The angels so sweetly are singing, up there's that beautiful scene, the song of redemption is ringing, a beautiful heaven must be, a beautiful heaven must be, sweet home of the happy and free. The haven of rest will be, a beautiful heaven must be. Since we're in this service is part four, let's continue on with the patriarchs and prophets. We're in the chapter from Sinai to Kadesh. We're on page 385. It says the last two lines of page 384, we'll start. Yahweh had chosen Moses and had put his spirit upon him, and Miriam and Aaron, by their murmuring, were guilty of disloyalty. Not only unto their appointed leader, but unto Elohim himself. The seditious whisperers were summoned to the tabernacle and brought face to face with Moses. And Yahweh came down in the pillar of the cloud and stood in the door of the tabernacle and called Aaron and Miriam. And their claim unto the prophetic gift was not denied. Elohim might have spoken unto them in visions and dreams, but unto Moses, whom the Yahweh himself declared, faithful in all mine house, a near communion had been granted. With him, Yahweh spake mouth to mouth. Wherefore then were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? And the anger of the Yahweh was kindled against them, and he departed. The cloud disappeared from the tabernacle and the token of Yahweh's displeasure, and Miriam was smitten. She became leprous, white as snow. Aaron was spared, but he was severely rebuked in the Miriam's punishment. Now their pride humbled in the dust, Aaron confessed their sin and entreated that his sister might not be left to perish by that loathsome and deadly scourge. In answer to the prayers of Moses, the leprosy was cleansed. Miriam was, however, shut out of the camp for 7 days. Not until she was banished from the encampment did the symbol of the Elohim's favor again rest up on the tabernacle. In the respect for her high position and in the grief at the blow that had fallen upon her, the whole company abode in Hazeroth, awaiting her return. This manifestation of the Yahweh's displeasure was designed to be a warning unto all Israel to check the growing spirit of discontent and insubordination. If Miriam's envy and dissatisfaction had not been signally rebuked, it would have resulted in great evil. Envy is one of the most satanic traits that can exist in the human heart, and it is one of the most baleful in its effects, says the wise man. Wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? It was envy that first caused discord in heaven, and its indulgence has wrought untold evil among men where envy and strife is there, nor is. There is confusion in every evil work. It should not be regarded as a light thing to speak evil of others or to make ourselves judges of their motives or actions. He that speaketh evil of his brother and judges his brother speaketh evil of the law and judges the law. But if thou judge the law, thou art not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is but one judge, he who both will bring to light the hidden things of darkness and will make manifest the counsels of the hearts, and whoever takes it upon himself to judge and to condemn his fellow man and usurping the prerogative of the Creator. The Bible especially teaches us to beware of lightly bringing accusations against those whom Elohim has called to act as his ambassador. The Apostle Peter, describing the cast who are abandoned, sinners, says, presumptuous are they, self-willed, they are not afraid to speak evil of dignity, whereas angels, which are greater in power and might, bring not railing accusation against them before the Yahweh. And Paul, in his instructor for those who are placed over the church, says, against an elder receive not an accusation, but before 2 or 3 witnesses. He who has placed upon men the heavy responsibility of leaders and teaches of his people will hold the people accountable for the manner in which they treat his service. We are to honor those whom Elohim hath honored. The judgment visited upon Miriam should be a rebuke unto all who yield unto jealousy and murmur against those upon whom Elohim lays the burden of his work. The 12 spies, 11 days after leaving Mount Horeb, this is chapter 34, we're on page 387 of Patriarchs and Prophets. It says, the Hebrew host encamped at Kadesh in the wilderness of the Paran, which was not far from the borders of the Promised Land. Here it was proposed by the people that spies be sent up to survey the country. The matter was presented before the Yahweh by the Moses, and permission was granted with the direction that one of the rulers of each tribe should be selected for this purpose. The men were chosen as had been directed, and Moses bade them go and see the country, what it was, its situation and natural advantages, and the people that dwelt therein, whether they were strong or weak, few or many. Also to observe the nature of the soil and its productiveness, and to bring of the fruit of the land. They went and surveyed the whole land, entering at the southern border and proceeding unto the northern extremity. They returned after an absence of 40 days. The people of Israel were cherishing high hopes and were waiting in eager expectancy. For the news of the spies' return was carried from tribe to tribe and was hailed with rejoicing. The people rushed out to meet the messengers who had safely escaped the dangers of their perilous undertaking. The spies brought specimens of the fruit, showing the fertility of the soil. It was in the time of the ripe grapes, and they brought a cluster of grapes so large that it was carried between two men. They also brought the figs and pomegranates, which grew there in abundance. The people rejoiced that they were to come into possession of so goodly a land, and they listened intently as the report was brought to Moses, that not a word should escape them. "We came unto the land whither thou sentest us," the spies began, "and surely it floweth with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it." The people were enthusiastic. They would eagerly obey the voice of Yahweh and go up at once to possess the land. But after describing the beauty and fertility of the land, all but two of the spies enlarged upon the difficulties and dangers that lay before the Israelites. Should they undertake the conquest of the Canaan, they enumerated the powerful nations located in the various parts of the country and said that the cities were walled and very great, and the people who dwelt therein were strong, and it would be impossible to conquer them. They also stated that they had seen giants, the sons of Anak, there, and it was useless to think of possessing the land. Now here it is, Yahweh's land, set aside, designated for his people, Israel, and gave them every indication and reason to know that he was leading them and well able to fulfill on his promises and delivering them into the land that he had given to them for an inheritance. And yet they had those naysayers in their midst. It's always people that are in leadership position. I guess the one to get up there and to resist and cause other people to resist the truth and to lose their crown and lose everything. Always those people that are unconverted that got the. Always get up there and have the leadership role. They got to get in position. If there's nobody there to resist them, what else can you do? Now the scene changed. Hope and courage gave place to cowardly despair. As the spies uttered the sentiments of their unbelieving hearts, which were filled with the discouragement prompted by the Satan, their unbelief cast a gloomy shadow over the congregation. And the mighty power of the Elohim, so often manifested in the behalf of the chosen nation, was forgotten. The people did not wait to reflect. They did not reason that he who had brought them thus far would certainly give them the land. They did not call to mind how wonderfully Yahweh had delivered them from the oppressors, cutting a path through the sea and destroying the pursuing host of the Pharaoh. They left Yahweh out of the question and acted as though they must depend solely on the power of arms. In their unbelief, they limited the power of Yahweh and distrusted the hand that had hitherto safely guided them. And they repeated their former error of murmuring against Moses and Aaron. This, then, is the end of all our hopes, they said. This is the land we have traveled all the way from Egypt to possess. They accused their leaders of deceiving the people and bringing trouble upon the Israel. The people were desperate in their disappointment and despair. A wail of agony arose and mingled with the confused murmur of the voices. Caleb comprehended the situation and bold to stand in the defense of the word of Yahweh. He did all in his power to counteract the evil influence of his unfaithful associate. For an instant, the people were still to listen unto his words of hope and courage, respecting the goodly land. He did not contradict what had already been said. The walls were high and the Canaanites strong. But Elohim had promised the land unto Israel. Let us go up at once and possess it, urged Caleb, for we are well able to overcome it. But the ten interrupting him pictured the obstacles in darker colors than at first. We be not able to go up against the people, they declared, for they are stronger than we. All the people that we saw in it are men of a great stature. And there we saw the giants, the sons of Anak, which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers, and so we were in their sight. These men, having entered upon a wrong course, stubbornly set themselves against Caleb and Joshua, against Moses, and against Yahweh. Every advance step rendered them the more determined. They were resolved to discourage all effort to gain possession of Canaan. They destroyed the truth in order to sustain their baleful influence. It is a land that eateth up the inhabitants thereof, they said. This was not only an evil report, but it was also a lying one. It was inconsistent with itself. The spies had declared the country to be fruitful and prosperous, and the people of the giant stature, all of which would be impossible if the climate were so unhealthful that the land could be said to eat up the inhabitants. But when men yield their hearts to unbelief, they place themselves under the control of Satan, and none can tell to what lengths he will lead them. And all the congregation lifted up their voice and cried, and the people wept, and that night, revolt and open mutiny quickly followed, for Satan had full sway and the people seemed bereft of reason. They cursed Moses and Aaron for getting that Elohim hearkened to their wicked speeches, and that enshrouded in the cloudy pillar the angel of his presence was witnessing their terrible outburst of the wrath. In bitterness they cried out, would Elohim that we had died in the land of Egypt, or would Elohim we had died in the wilderness? Then their feelings rose against Yahweh. Wherefore hath Yahweh brought us unto this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be a prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt? And they said one to another, let us make a captain and let us return into Egypt. Thus they accused not only Moses, but Elohim himself of deception in promising them a land which they were not able to possess. And they went so far as to appoint a captain to lead them back to the land of their suffering and bondage. from which they had been delivered by the strong arm of the Omnipotent. In the humiliation and distress, Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel, not knowing what to do to turn them from that rash and passionate purpose. Caleb and Joshua attempted to quiet the tumult with their garments rent in token grief of the nation. They rushed in among the people, and their ringing voices were heard above the tempest of the lamentation and rebellious grief. The land which we passed through to search it is an exceeding good land. If the Yahweh delight in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it unto us. A land which flows with milk and honey, only rebel not against Yahweh. Neither fear ye the people of the land, for they are bred for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Yahweh is with us. Fear them not. The Canaanites have filled up the measure of their iniquity. The Yahweh would no longer bear with them. His protection being removed, they would be an easy prey. By the covenant of Yahweh, the land was insured to Israel. But the false report of the unfaithful spies was accepted, and through it the whole congregation were deluded. The traitors had done their work. If only the two men had brought the evil report, and all the ten had encouraged them to possess the land in the name of Yahweh, they would still have taken the advice of the two in preference to the ten because of their wicked unbelief. But there were only two advocating the right, while ten were on the side of rebellion. The unfaithful spies were loud in the denunciation of Caleb and Joshua, and the cry was raised to stone them. The insane mob seized a missiles with which to slay those faithful men. They rushed forward with yells of madness when suddenly the stone dropped from their hands. A hush fell upon them, and they shook with fear. Yahweh had interposed to check their murderous design. The glory of his presence, like a flaming light, illuminated the tabernacle. All the people beheld the signal of the Yahweh. A mightier one than they had revealed himself, and none dared continue their resistance. The spies who brought the evil report, crushed, terror-stricken, and with bated breath, sought their tents. Moses now arose and entered the tabernacle. Yahweh declared unto him, I will smite them with the pestilence and disinherit them, and will make of thee a greater nation. But again Moses pleaded for his people. He could not consent to have them destroyed, and himself made a mightier nation. Appealing unto the mercy of Elohim, he said, I beseech thee, let the power of thy Elohim be great according as thou hast spoken, saying, the Yahweh is long-suffering and of great mercy. Pardon, I beseech thee, the iniquity of this people according unto the greatness of thy mercy. And as thou hast forgiven this people from Egypt even until now, the Yahweh promised to spare Israel from the immediate destruction, but because of their unbelief and cowardice, he could not manifest his power to subdue their enemies. Therefore, in his mercy, he bade them, as the only safe course, to turn back toward the Red Sea. In their rebellion, the people had exclaimed, with Elohim we had died in this wilderness. Now this prayer was to be granted. The Yahweh declared, as you have spoken in mine ears, so will I do unto you. Your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness, and all that were numbered of you, according unto your whole number, from 20 years old and upward. But your little ones, which you said should be a prey, them will I bring in, and they shall know the land which ye have despised. And of Caleb he said, My servant Caleb, because he had another spirit with him, and had followed me fully, him will I bring into the land whereunto he went, and his seed shall possess it. As the spies had spent 40 days in their journey, so the host of Israel were to wander in the wilderness 40 years. It says that when Moses made known unto the people the divine decision, their rage was changed to mourning. They knew that their punishment was just. The 10 unfaithful spies divinely smitten by the plague perished before the eyes of all Israel, and in their fate the people read their own doom. Now they seem sincerely to repent of their sinful conduct, but they saw it because the result of their evil course, rather than from a sense of their ingratitude and disobedience. When they found that the Yahweh did not relent in his decree, their self-will again arose, and they declared that they would not return into the wilderness. In the commanding them to retire from the land of their enemies, Yahweh tested their apparent submission and proved that it was not real. They knew that they had deeply sinned in the allowing their rash feelings to control them, and in seeking to slay the spies who had urged them to obey Yahweh, but they were only terrified to find that they had made a fearful mistake, the consequences of which would prove disastrous to themselves. Their hearts were unchanged, and they only needed an excuse to occasion a similar outbreak. This presented itself when Moses, by the authority of Yahweh, commanded them to go back into the wilderness. To decree that Israel was not to enter Canaan for 40 years was a bitter disappointment unto Moses and Aaron, Caleb and Joshua. Yet without a murmur, they accepted the divine decision. But those who had been complaining of Yahweh's dealings with them and declaring that they would return unto Egypt wept and mourned greatly when the blessings which they had despised were taken from them. They had complained at nothing, and now Yahweh gave them cause to weep. Had they mourned for their sin when it was faithfully laid before them, this sentence would not have been pronounced. But they mourned for the judgment. Their sorrow was not repentance and could not secure a reversion of their sentence. The night was spent in the lamentation, but with the morning came a hope. They resolved to redeem their cowardice. When Yahweh had bidden them go up and take the land, they had refused, and now when he directed them to retreat, they were equally rebellious. They determined to seize upon the land and possess it. It might be that Elohim would accept their work and change his purpose toward them. Yahweh had made it their privilege and their duty to enter the land at the time of his appointment. But through their willful neglect, that permission had been withdrawn. Satan had gained his object in preventing them from entering Canaan, and now he urged them on to do the very thing in the face of the divine prohibition, which they had refused to do when Elohim required it. Thus the great deceiver gained the victory by leading them to rebellion the second time. They had distrusted the power of Yahweh to work with their efforts in gaining possession of Canaan. Yet now they presumed upon their own strength to accomplish their work independent of the divine aid. We have sinned against the Yahweh, they cried. We will go up and fight according to all that the Yahweh Elohim commanded us. So terribly blinded had they become by transgression, Yahweh had never commanded them to go up and fight. It was not his purpose that they should gain the land by warfare, but by strict obedience unto his command. Though their hearts were unchanged, the people had been brought to confess the sinfulness and folly of their rebellion at the report of the spies, and now saw the value of the blessing which they had so rashly cast away. They confessed that it was their own unbelief which had shut them out from Canaan. We have sinned, they said, acknowledging that the fault was in themselves and not in Yahweh, whom they had so wickedly charged with failing to fulfill his promises unto them. Though their confession did not spring from the true repentance, it served to vindicate the justice of Yahweh and his dealings with them. Yahweh still works in a similar manner to glorify his name by bringing men for the acknowledging of his justice. When those who profess to love him complain of his providence, despise his promises, and yield into temptation, unite with evil angels to defeat the purpose of Elohim, Yahweh often so overrules circumstances as to bring these persons where, though they may have no real repentance, they will be convinced of their sin and will be constrained to acknowledge the wickedness of their course and the justice and goodness of Yahweh and his dealings with them. It is thus that Elohim sets counter agencies at work to make manifest the works of darkness. And though the spirit which prompted unto the evil course is not radically changed, confessions are made that vindicate the honor of Yahweh and justify his faithful reprovers who have been opposed and misrepresented. Thus it will be when the wrath of the Yahweh shall be finally poured out, when the Yahweh cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all. He will also convince all that are unrighteous among them of all their unrighteous deeds. Every sinner will be brought to see and acknowledge the justice of his condemnation. Regardless of the divine sentence, the Israelites prepared to undertake the conquest of Canaan. Equipped with the armor and weapons of war, they were in their own estimation fully prepared for conflict. But they were sadly deficient in the sight of Elohim and his sorrowful servant, when nearly 40 years later the Yahweh declared the direction Israel to go up and take Jericho. He promised to go with them. The ark containing the law was born before their armies. His appointed leaders were to direct their movement under the divine supervision. With such guidance, no harm could come unto them. But now, contrary to the command of Elohim and the solemn prohibition of their leaders, without the ark and without Moses, they went out to meet the armies of the enemy. The trumpet sounded an alarm, and Moses hastened after them with the warning, "Wherefore now do ye transgress the command of Yahweh? But it shall not prosper. Go not up, for the Yahweh is not among you, that ye be not smitten before your enemies. For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword." The Canaanites had heard of the mysterious power that seemed to be guarding this people, and of the wonders wrought in their behalf, and they now summoned a strong force to repel the invaders. The attackers' army had no leader. No prayer was offered that Yahweh would give them the victory. Chapter 35, The Rebellion of Korah. For the judgments visited upon the Israelites served for a time for the restraining of their murmuring and insubordination. Verily, the spirit of the rebellion being instilled in the heart and eventually brought forth the bitter fruits. For the former rebellions had been mere popular tumults arising from the sudden impulse of the excited multitude. But now a deep-laid conspiracy was formed, the result of a determined purpose to overthrow the authority of the leaders appointed by Yahweh himself. Korah, the leading spirit in this movement, was a Levite of the family of Kohath, and a cousin of Moses. He was a man of ability and influence. They were appointed unto the service of the tabernacle. He had become dissatisfied with his position and aspired to the dignity of the priesthood. The bestowal upon Aaron and his house of the priestly office, which had formerly devolved upon the firstborn son of every family, and given rise unto the jealousy and dissatisfaction, and for some time Korah had been secretly opposing the authority of the Moses and Aaron, though he had not ventured upon any open act of the rebellion, for he finally conceived of the bold design for the overthrowing both of the evil and the religious authority. For he did not fail to find sympathizers close unto the tents of Korah and the Kohathites. On the south side of the tabernacle was the encampment of the tribe of the Reuben, the tents of the Dathan and Abiram, two princes of this tribe, being near that of the Korah. These princesses readily joined in his ambitious scheme. Being descendants from the eldest son of Jacob, they claimed that the evil authority belonged unto them, and they determined to divide with Korah the honors of the priesthood. The state of the feeling among the people favored the designs of the Korah, and the bitterness of their disappointment, their former doubts, jealousy and hatred had returned, and again their complaints were directed against their patient leader. The Israelites were continually losing sight of the fact that they were under the divine guidance. They forgot that the angel of the covenant was their invisible leader, that veiled by the cloudy pillow, the presence of the Yahshua went before them, and that from him Moses received all his directions. They were unwilling to submit unto the terrible sentence that they must all die in the wilderness, and hence they were ready to seize upon every pretext for believing that it was not Yahweh but Moses who was leading them and who had pronounced their doom. The best efforts of the meekest man upon the earth could not quell the insubordination of this people. And although the marks of the Elohim's displeasure at their former perverseness were still before them in their broken ranks and missing numbers, they did not take the lesson to heart. Again, they were overcome by the temptation. The humble shepherd's life of Moses had been far more peaceful and happy than his present position as leader of that vast assembly of the turbulent spirits. Yet Moses dared not choose, in the place of a shepherd's crook, a rod of power had been given him, which he could not lay down until Elohim should release him. Now this is the same thing that he has given this office, Elijah David, the rod of power. And that's the rod of the shepherd's rod that was started by B.T. Hollis in 1930. And so it's had the rod has had its successors. It's had Ben Roden, Rodus W. Johnson, and now Elijah David. It's had three successors. He who reads the secrets of all hearts had marked the purposes of Korah and his companion and had given his people such warning and instructions as might have enabled them to escape the deception of these designing men. They had seen the judgment of Elohim fall upon the Miriam because of their jealousy and complaints against the Moses. Yahweh had declared that Moses was greater than a prophet. With him will I speak mouth to mouth. Wherefore then, he added, were you not afraid to speak against my servant Moses? These instructions were not intended for Aaron and Miriam alone, but for all Israel. Korah and his fellow conspirators were men who had been favored with a special manifestation of Yahweh's power and greatness. They were of the number who went up with the Moses and to the mount and beheld the divine glory. But since that time, a change had come. A temptation, slight at first, had been harbored, and had strengthened as it was encouraged, until their minds were controlled by Satan, and they ventured upon their work of the disaffection, professing great interest in the prosperity of the people. They first whispered their discontent to one another, and then unto the leading men of Israel. Their insinuations were so readily received that they ventured still further, and at last they really believed themselves to be actuated by zeal for Yahweh. They were successful in alienating 250 princes, men of renown in the congregation. With these strong and influential supporters, they felt confident of making a radical change in the government and greatly improving upon the administration of Moses and Aaron. Jealousy had given rise to envy, and envy unto rebellion. They had discussed the question of the right of Moses to so great authority and honor until they had come to regard him as occupying a very enviable position, which any of them could fill as well as he. But they deceived themselves and one another into thinking that Moses and Aaron had themselves assumed the positions they held. The discontented ones said that these leaders had exalted themselves above the congregation of the Yahweh and taken upon them the priesthood and government, that their house was not entitled to distinction above others in Israel. They were no more holy than the people, and it should be enough for them to be on a level with their brethren, who were equally favored with Elohim's special presence and protection. The next work of the conspirators was with the people. And to those who are in the wrong and deserving of reproof, there is nothing more pleasing than to receive sympathy and praise. And thus Korah and his associates gained the attention and enlisted the support of the congregation. The charge that the murmurings of the people had brought upon them the wrath of the Yahweh was declared to be a mistake. They said that the congregation were not at fault, since they desired nothing more than their rights, but that Moses was an overbearing ruler, that he had reproved the people as sinners, and they were a holy people, and the Yahweh was among them. Korah reviewed the history of their travels through the wilderness, where they had been brought into strait places, and many had perished because of their murmurings and disobedience. His hearers thought they saw clearly that their troubles might have been prevented if Moses had pursued a different course. They decided that all their disasters were chargeable to him, and that their exclusion from Canaan was in consequence of the mismanagement of the Moses and Aaron, and that if Korah would be their leader and would encourage them by dwelling upon their good deeds instead of reproving their sins, they would have a very peaceful, prosperous journey. Instead of wandering to and fro in the wilderness, they would proceed directly to the promised land. So, you know, I'm impressed that we've got a clearer path right now than we've ever had. Yahweh has once again delivered us. This atonement here was another deliverance, because we had two people that used to be here come back into the picture. But I now know that even Elijah, you know, is not to be. It just flashed in my mind. He took a woman also, just like Ellen did. And if they did come back, they're going to have to bring their baggage with them. And their baggage, these are harlot women, is what they really are. They just really are just harlot women. They picked up harlots. Doriana may be a pretty nice girl, but she may not be, but I'll tell you. In this work of disaffection, there was greater union and harmony among the discordant elements of the congregation than had ever before existed. Core success with the people increased his confidence and confirmed him in his belief that the usurpation of the authority by the Moses, if unchecked, would be fatal to the liberties of Israel. He also claimed that Elohim had opened the matter unto him and had authorized him to make a change in the government before it should be too late. But many were not ready to accept Korah's accusation against Moses. The memory of his patient, self-sacrificing labors came up before them, and conscience were disturbed. It was therefore necessary to assign some selfish motive for his deep interest for Israel, and the old charge was reiterated that he had led them out to perish in the wilderness that he might seize upon their possession. For a time this work was carried on secretly. As soon, however, as the movement had gained sufficient strength to warrant an open rupture, Korah appeared at the head of the faction and publicly accused Moses and Aaron of usurping authority, which Korah and his associates were equally entitled to share. It was charged further that the people had been deprived of their liberties and independence. "You take too much upon you," said the conspirators, "seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Yahweh is among them. Wherefore then lift up ye up yourselves above the congregation of Yahweh." Moses had not suspected this deep-laid plot, and when its terrible significance burst upon him, he fell upon his face in silence, appealed unto Yahweh. He arose sorrowful indeed, but calm and strong. Divine guidance had been granted him. "Even unto tomorrow, he said, the Yahweh will show who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even unto him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. The test was to be deferred until tomorrow, that all might have time for reflection. Then those who aspired unto the priesthood were to come each with a censer and offer incense at the tabernacle in the presence of the congregation. The law was very explicit that only those who had been ordained to the sacred office should minister in the sanctuary, and even the priests Nadab and Abihu had been destroyed for venturing to offer strange fire in the disregard of a divine command. Yet Moses challenged his accuser if they dared enter upon so perilous an appeal to refer the matter unto Yahweh. Okay, now it says, singing not Korah and his fellow Levites, Moses said, "Seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the Elohim of Israel hath separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near unto himself to do the service of the tabernacle of Yahweh and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. And he hath brought thee near unto him, and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek ye the priesthood also, for which cause both thou and all thy company are gathered together against the Yahweh. And what is Aaron that you murmur against him?" Dathan and Abiram had not taken so bold a stand as had Korah and Moses, hoping that they might have been drawn into the conspiracy without having become wholly corrupted summoned them to appear before him, that he might hear their charges against them, but they would not come. And they innocently refused to acknowledge his authority. Their reply uttered in the hearing of the congregation was, "Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of a land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey, or giveth us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up." Thus they applied to the scene of their bondage the very language in which the Yahweh had described the promised inheritance. They accused Moses of pretending to act under the divine guidance as a means of establishing his authority, and they declared that they would no longer submit to be led about like blind men, now toward Canaan and now toward the wilderness, as best suited his ambitious design. Thus he who had been as a tender father, a patient shepherd, was represented in the blackest character of a tyrant and usurper. The exclusion from Canaan and the punishment of their own sins was charged upon him. It was evident that the sympathies of the people were with the disaffected party. But Moses made no effort at self-vindication. He solemnly appealed to Yahweh in the presence of the congregation as a witness and to the purity of his motives and the uprightness of his conduct, and implored him to be his judge. On the morrow, the 250 princes with Korah at their head presented themselves with their censers. They were brought into the court of the tabernacle, while the people gathered without to await the result. It was not Moses who assembled the congregation to behold the defeat of Korah and his coming, but the rebels in their blind presumption had called them together to build their victory. A large part of the congregation openly sided with Korah, whose hopes were high of carrying his point against Moses. And, I read that wrong. It says, a large part of the congregation openly sided with Korah, whose hopes were high of carrying his point against Aaron. As they were thus assembled before Yahweh, the glory of Yahweh appeared unto all of the congregation. The divine warning was commanded to Moses and Aaron, "Separate yourself from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." But they fell upon their faces with the prayer, "O Yahweh, the Elohim of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and wilt thou be wroth with all the congregation?" Korah had withdrawn from the assembly to join Dathan and Abiram, whom Moses, accompanied by the 70 elders, went down with a last warning to the men who had refused to come to him. The multitudes followed, and before delivering his message, Moses, by the divine direction, bade the people, "Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest ye be consumed in all their sin." Their warning was obeyed, for an apprehension of impending judgment rested upon all. The chief rebels saw themselves abandoned by those whom they had deceived, but their hardihood was unshaken. They stood with their families in the door of their tents, as if in the defiance of the divine warning. In the name of the Yahweh of Israel, Moses now declared in the hearing of the congregation, "Hereby ye shall know that the Yahweh has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of my own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Yahweh hath not sent me. Surely if the Yahweh make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up, with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then ye shall understand that these men have provoked Yahweh. The eyes of all Israel were fixed upon Moses as they stood in the terror and expectation, awaiting the event. As he ceased speaking, the solid earth parted, and the rebels went down alive into the pit with all that pertained unto them, and they perished among the congregation. The people fled, self-condemned as partakers in the sin. But the judgments were not ended. Fire flashing from the cloud consumed the 250 princes who had offered incense. These men, not being the first in rebellion, were not destroyed with the chief conspirators. They were permitted to see their end and to have an opportunity for repentance. But their sympathies were with the rebels, and they shared their fate. When the Moses was entreating Israel to flee from the coming destruction, the divine judgment might even then have been stayed if Korah and his company had repented and sought forgiveness, but their stubborn persistence sealed their doom, for the entire congregation were sharers in their guilt, for all had, unto a greater or less degree, sympathized with them. Yet Elohim, in his great mercy, made a distinction between the leaders in rebellion and those whom they had led. For the people who had permitted themselves to be deceived were still granted space for repentance. Overwhelming evidence had been given that they were wrong and that Moses was right. A signal manifestation of Elohim's power had removed all uncertainty. This brings a close our study series. Contact this is the 11th hour call, number 11. I'm going to close on this service now with a song that I've written entitled Swing Those Pearly Gates Wide. Many are striving for a little bit of heaven, and I'm a striving too. My heart is set on those mansions that go somewhere beyond the moon. Bells are ringing and angels are singing. Swing those pearly gates wide. There's gonna be event celebration over on the other side. Bells are ringing, the angels are singing, and the saints are singing too. Heaven has opened its doors to the one trodden through. Oh, the grandest event of all time has finally arrived. For the celebration's about to begin. So swing those pearly gates wide. I've walked the path my Savior trod, many trials I've had to endure. I have my treasures laid up in the heavenly place secure. Joshua and the Father and the guardian and angel are me and the person all three. Never for a moment will I ever forget what they have done for me. Bells are ringing, the angels are singing, and the saints are singing too. Heaven has opened its doors to the born God and true. For the grandest event of all time has finally arrived. For the celebration's about to begin, so swing the pearly gates wide. There are many people in this world who have a lot to say about the things that's going on as we approach the day, when the final counting will be done, and how chance to turn things around. People are searching for the hidden treasure in the master's will. Many things are written there that man has never heard. And again, he may never be able to understand unless the faith he takes a hold of the invisible hand. Bells are ringing, angels are singing, and the saints are singing too. Heaven has opened its door to the born God. For the grand decision of all time has finally arrived. For the celebration's about to begin, so sweet those pearly gates fly. Everyone can be a winner, all they have to do is try. It takes faith and a lot of believing and a whole lot of new work done. So put on the garments of salvation and come along the street. Together flowers for the national bouquet that will bloom eternally. It's been a long time coming and I can hardly wait until they sing the pearly gates wide and start to celebrate. For the grandest evening of all time has finally arrived. There's going to be a grand celebration on the other side. Bells are ringing, the angels are singing, and the saints are singing too. Heaven has opened its doors to the one God is true. The grandest event of all time has come.